Wags. Weekly Wags. Useless. Weekly Wags. Weekly Wags. Weekly Wags. Useless. You're hopeless. Weekly Wags. Useless. Weekly Wags. Useless. Weekly Wags. Useless. Weekly Wags. Weekly Wags. Weekly Wags. Useless. Weekly Wags. Useless. Weekly Wags. Useless.
Welcome to episode 23 of Weekly Wags. I'm Alex Hayes. Here with me is Will, as always. And today we have Yanni Zhao joining us in Sydney at Lyft.
So Yanni was one of the most accomplished junior powerlifters that Powerlifting Australia has had. She was a 2 times junior IPF world champion in the under 84 kilo class.
Oh, once in the super heavyweights.
Once, is that two in the under 84s and one in the super heavyweights?
No.
Okay.
One in each.
All right, correction. 2-time junior world champion, one in the under 84s, one in the supers. She held a squat world record. Was that open or junior?
Junior.
Okay, and you have the squat and deadlift and total Powerlifting Australia open under 84 kilo records, but you got them as a junior, is that correct?
That is true.
And you're still a junior.
Last year juniors, next year I'm old.
And we've also written down that you have the accomplishment of having been coached by Robert Wilkes and still being here.
Oh, thank you.
So just fill us in, sorry, what were the numbers? What were the numbers for those world records that you held?
The squat world record was 198 kilos. I did squat 202.5 at Australian Nationals, but because it wasn't an international comp, it didn't count. And at the time, that was only 3.5 kilos off the world record.
Yeah, cool. So you've got a very interesting story, but I think the best thing for us to do is wind it all the way back to the beginning of your powerlifting career. How did you get into powerlifting?
How did I get into powerlifting? I actually really didn't have any idea what powerlifting was at the start. I went to high school with my buddy Andrew Seely, and we used to just muck around in the weights room at school. And he finished high school a year before me, and then he started studying at Melbourne Uni. And he asked me if I wanted to go check out the Melbourne Uni Powerlifting Club with him. And I said, sure, why not? So we emailed Wilkes. He emailed us back with a one-word reply. I can't remember what it was. It was simply just show up.
Probably fine or pathetic.
Something sure. Like that.
Rubbish.
Useless.
We went in, he made us do a few testing lifts, and then he told us to compete the following month. And that's all we did. That's how we got
it. What were your numbers in your first competition?
140 squat, 77.5 bench, and 162 deadlift.
So they're still actually really good.
That's very reasonable.
Yeah. We know the exact, or at least Alex and I know the exact Rob Wilkes assessment method. Because if you do the Powerlifting Australia coaching course, have you done it?
I have done it.
Yeah, so you know how he makes you go through that process where somebody walks into the gym and you say, oh, what can you lift? And they say, oh, I squatted 200 kilos. And you go, oh, where'd you do it? And they say, oh, you know, my back garden with my dog. And you say, right, oh, you know, show me a squat. And you run them through it, but you act all skeptical and things.
Yeah.
So,
but the first thing is give us your credit card details.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Give us your credit card details and, yeah, do you have insurance? Okay, so... So you almost got into powerlifting by accident.
Yeah. At my first competition, Stephen Pritchard was one of the referees, and I had no idea what was going on the competition, so I had to ask him, which lift goes first? And he just looked back at me with this blank look. He's like, the squat. I'm like, thank you.
Thank you.
What I find funny about this story is somewhere along the line you decided to go to Melbourne Powerlifting Club. Just to check it out. But you didn't know what the sport was. So what was it that attracted you to this idea?
Well, it's a powerlifting and weightlifting club.
Right.
But it's not really a weightlifting club. It's just powerlifting.
Does Wilkes coach weightlifting as well?
No.
No. Because have you seen, there's footage somewhere of Wilkes coaching JP. That's your weekly shout out, JP. At doing like a power clean or something.
Oh, yeah, I have seen that video.
Yeah. So I'm not.
That was in the Whit Sundays.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how Wilksy would go as a weightlifting coach. I actually competed in weightlifting myself for a while, And weightlifting coaches are a different breed again. There's like there's a lot of Rob Wilkes in them, but it's Rob Wilkes with like a lot more sort of Eastern European to it. You know?
More tuck-in shirts and polos.
Yeah, you got to tuck your shirt in, wear your shorts really high. I actually trained, I did a couple of sessions at this place that's like, it was like the N-Swiss weightlifting center or something. And the coach's name was Luke Borogini. And he was a very good coach. I was sent there by my coach because I was doing rugby and weightlifting at the same time. And so this guy, I think he took it upon himself to try and basically convince me to drop rugby. And so he made me sit at the bottom of an overhead squat with like 50 kilos above my head. And he was walking in circles around me, like interrogating me, going like sort of good cop, bad cop between like when he was in front of me and behind me and asking me like what motivated me and do I think I can serve two masters and things. It was really fucking weird. And so I was down there for like quite a while as well.
What was your body weight at the time?
At that stage I was only like 95. This wasn't fat Will. Yeah, super shredded. But it was pretty different. And I was like, far out, this is what weightlifting coaching is. Like I was used to footy where they were just like, oh, do some sprints and beers.
Yeah.
So it's different. All right, so you went to the powerlifting and weightlifting club for God knows what reason. You did a competition a month later. And at that stage, did you realize you were quite good at it?
Yes and no. I did break all the records at my first competition. But it doesn't really count because that's when they refreshed all the records.
Yeah, the new weight classes.
Yeah, the new weight classes. So the standards were quite average at the time.
So how long was it from your first comp to your first international comp?
At the end of the year, we had at the end of 2014, I started January 2014, and then we had the Asia Oceanas
That was in Melbourne.
Yeah, in Melbourne, yeah. In December.
Okay, and when you did that, when you got that first slice of international competition, did that inspire you to pursue it further, or at that stage were you still sort of just bumbling through?
I still had no idea what was going on. I was just doing what Wilkes told me to do.
So, again, to the listeners who actually haven't met Yanni, she's one of the most sort of happy-go-lucky people that I've ever come across.
Oh, cheers, mate.
Yeah, but it seems to me like you've sort of just... you bumbled through this powerlifting journey and accidentally went from excellent to, like, world-beatingly good.
just tripped down a few stairs and became world champion.
Yeah, landed at the bottom in a perfect squatting position.
Well, nice. Lucky for me, because I'm, you know, a bit heavier and there's not as much heavier women, so it's not as competitive for me.
Sure, but I think once you get to the international stage, like, the thing about international competition, I guess, that makes it different from local competition is... by definition, there is still the odd not good lifter who gets there, but pretty much by definition, you have good lifters.
Yeah.
And so you get, and again, because you're at the elite level, like elite people are by definition outliers. And so, you know, you might say there aren't that many heavyweight women who are good, but that's in Australia. When you collect all the outliers to compete for a medal, then chances are there's going to be a few heavyweight women who are built to lift weights.
Yeah, or international competitions or world championships have been very competitive.
Yeah.
Great fun.
What are some of the best memories you have of competing internationally, other than hanging out with Will and I in Springstead?
Team PB, that was also lots of fun.
Guys, listen to episode number 285 for when we had Tim on the podcast. We didn't actually, you remember we had technical difficulties and we didn't actually publish the story of 285 kilos.
Do you want to tell the story now?
Oh no, it'll take quite a while, but we will have Tim Davies back on the podcast at some stage soon and we'll get the story of 285 out there. But if you were there, you know.
It's a great story.
Okay, so that was one.
Stay tuned.
Thank you. Yanni, you should host. you can interview Alex and I one time about what it's like to be mediocre. So Uzbekistan was fun. What about Worlds? Where was Worlds in 2015?
It was in Finland. That was my first Worlds.
Yeah, how was that?
It was great fun, and JP, he bloody sprained my foot that competition as well. But luckily, that was after I competed. A few hours after I competed.
What's the story? There's a video that JP constantly shares of him running down the road yelling, like, how do you have a bicycle? I'm running like a crazy bicycle person. What's the story of that?
Him and Joey stole a bike somewhere.
Joey Zingini?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was after Nationals in Melbourne some year. I think 2014 or 15.
Yeah.
And they just got wasted.
I mean, considering how big our viewership is now, we probably have like some ASIO and federal police and stuff listening. So,
Kelvin Kenny.
So JP has allegedly stolen a bike in the past.
Well, I wouldn't say stolen because he still returned it after by leaving it somewhere where it wasn't.
So he just borrowed it.
Yeah, he liberated the bike for a little bit.
He rented it for free.
All right. So at that Worlds, did you place first?
Yeah, it was a great competition because a few weeks out from the competition, I actually sprained my back really bad and I couldn't train properly. So initially my total was much higher than the rest of my competitors, but then because I was injured, it made it a really competitive weight class.
How'd that affect you actually going into compete itself? Are you worried your back would go?
A little bit, but we also chucked on a heaps of, is it called the deep heat, but even hotter. It starts with F. I forgot what it's called.
Fucking deep heat.
You're allowed to swear on this podcast.
That's
the line. Yeah. So my back was just burning that I couldn't even feel the pain anymore.
Nope. Perfect coaching strategy. And then that was as an under 84?
Yeah, under 84.
So was it 2016 that you went to the next Worlds?
Yeah, 2016.
And where was 2016 Worlds?
It was in Texas, in Killeen.
That's right. How was that one by comparison?
It was great fun because in the under 84 kilogram weight class, it was too competitive, so I decided to just bulk up to the over 84s.
Yeah.
And I weighed in at 96 kilos. It was so much fun because you're in Texas and you're just eating everything and you don't have to care as a super heavyweight. And portion sizes are huge.
That's why Baxter says that super heavyweights are the funnest people to hang out with.
Yeah, because you can actually go to dinner. Yeah, I actually do remember vaguely something about you on Instagram at that stage when you were like pushing yourself up to being 96 or something for 84. You were just pounding food.
And you made a joke about weigh-in PB.
Oh, yeah, weigh-in PB too. I actually came back from America at exactly 100 kilos. Jesus,
that is, like when I hit a dollar when I was like 16.
I was
a pretty fat 16-year-old. When I hit a dollar, I was like, fuck, I'm big. And not in a good way, like as in I'm a thick boy. And I'm just thinking about, imagine being...
Not with C's either, with a K.
Double K. I was just thinking like what that must have been like for you, particularly when you're 16 kilos above your already heavy weight class.
It was a struggle just waddling to places.
Waddling is the word. Did you notice you got the sweats when you were, sorry to say, but you were fat? When you ate, did you sometimes just start sweating?
I do that and I'm
I still sweat now even though I'm less fat.
Oh, well, when I was like proper fat, I would sit there for lunch at school and I would literally be in like a full body sweat eating food and I'd just pound it down anyway.
Just eating and, like, all the thermogenics.
Dedication.
Yeah, seriously, it was crazy. And then like everything you did, you sweated. So it's like I'd play drums for 5 minutes and I'd just be lathered in sweat. And it wasn't that I was unfit. I was just so much body heat.
I feel like that's a good thing about powerlifting. You don't have to feel so bad about yourself for being so obese.
Yeah, that's a good and bad thing. All right. So we want to zoom ahead to kind of the reason that we've gotten you onto this podcast, because this is where your story goes from, you know, you excelling at the sport to actually being very interesting. And in October...
Oh, thanks.
Well, that was also interesting, but I think this is the thing
more
that...
More interesting.
Yeah, more interesting. It's the thing that I think sets you apart. So in October of 2017, I believe immediately after Nationals of that year, you were diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, which is a blood cancer.
That's right.
And yeah, that happened straight after Open Nationals. And I think you posted an Instagram post at one stage where you said that the thing that actually made you decide to go get tested was because you had this very sharp pain during your final deadlift in lymph node. So I'd like you to just sort of run us through the events leading into that diagnosis.
Well, I was actually feeling pretty unwell for about a week leading up internationals. But I was just so busy finishing uni assignments and obviously getting ready for the competition that I didn't bother to go see a doctor. And even on the morning walking to the competition, I was just walking up the flight of stairs from the car park to the lifting venue, which was only probably 10 steps, and I was completely out of breath. It's like, gosh, I should really start doing some cardio. I didn't know that was because I was so sick. Well, lucky for powerlifting that it's not such an aerobic sport, so I was still able to perform well. And I also had really, really big swollen lymph nodes in my neck. But I thought it was just because I was, had a minor cold or something. Sometimes people's lymph nodes swell up when they get cold. But then one of them really, really started hurting after my final deadlift. And it was hurting all night long at the banquet as well. I was taking painkillers, but it was still hurting. So people advised me that I should probably go see a doctor. And I was like, oh, all right, fine, I'll go see a doctor. I went to see the doctor the following day after nationals. The doctor didn't know what was wrong with me either. So she ordered a blood test. And I got the blood test done and then got sent home. The following day, when they got the blood test results, the clinic called me urgently. The doctor said she needed to see me urgently. It's like, I'm on my way to work, can I see you late in the week? She's like, nah, you gotta come. And I was like, oh, all right, fine. So I did a U-turn, went to see the doctor. And then after I saw my doctor, I went to Box Hill Emergency Hospital. And then I was just in and out of the waiting room doing lots and lots of tests for hours.
So what is it like in the moment when somebody comes in and says, Yani, you have cancer?
Well, actually, at first they weren't certain because on a blood test it shows that you may have leukemia, but the only way to be 100% certain is through a bone marrow biopsy. So that wasn't done until the following morning when the hospital had time to do a bone marrow biopsy.
What's it like having a bone marrow biopsy? Where do they take it from?
From your hip, from the lower hip at the back. So you curl up into a little fetal position on the hospital bed, and then the doctor shoves this massive needle into your hip and draws out your bone. But yeah, you're under general anaesthetic.
Okay, I was going to say that sounds quite painful.
Yeah, it is a bit.
But you're under a general, so you imagine it's quite painful.
Yeah, well, you fall asleep. Well, I fall asleep, but then as soon as they suck out the bone, it wakes me up for a second.
And had you expected the news when you first went to the doctor to be serious, or did you, or
no,
at that stage were you still?
I was in disbelief. I was like, surely not. Like, it must be something else.
I find it... I wrote this down when we were preparing for this episode. People always complain about feeling quite beaten up during a peak. And like, I'm peaking right now, and I'm always like, oh, everything's sore and it hurts and I'm tired. But I imagine that sort of having undiagnosed cancer would be a step much worse than that.
Yeah.
So do you think you were in denial about being sick at this stage, or was it really indistinguishable for you from the fatigue of peaking?
Well, before I was diagnosed, I obviously just thought I was fatigued from training.
How different was it, though, than just a normal competition peak?
Because when you have blood cancer, you have a lot less red blood cells in your body, so you just run out of breath really easily, and you don't have as much energy. So that's one major difference, just being out of breath all the time.
Do you feel more fatigued than usual?
Yeah, well, normally after a set of heavy squats, I'll lie down on the floor for 10 minutes.
Definitely.
Yeah, you're an Alex
Trebrandy. But leading into this national concert, I had blood cancer. I'll lie down for at least 20 minutes in between sets.
So how many weeks was this going on for before the before the competition?
Well, the doctors say they don't know. They can't give you an accurate time. But for me personally, it only felt like 1 or 2 weeks before I was diagnosed.
And for those of us who don't know a huge lot about acute myeloid lymphoma, or leukemia, I should say.
Yep.
How serious of a cancer is this?
Well, my case was actually not too bad. So you have cases with good outcomes and not as good outcomes. And for me, luckily, I only needed two rounds of chemo and then I was all good. Other people, they do need a lot more chemo and also bone marrow transplants as well before they can recover.
So I guess that was our next topic, was your recovery process. So can you talk us through like how long you're in hospital, what the treatments you had were, and just how you were feeling mentally throughout the process?
Yeah. Well, the first week after it sunk in that I actually have cancer, I was pretty sad.
She's got the biggest smile on her face right now.
You can say that. Yeah, you're one of a kind, Yoni.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
No, I was pretty sad for like a week. But
yeah.
But then just all my friends and family, everyone was so supportive. And everyone from the powerlifting club as well came to visit me, send me messages. And I was just so overwhelmed and just brought my spirits back up. So mentally, that wasn't too much of a struggle. And especially through powerlifting for so many years and being an athlete, I feel like it really builds your personal resilience to just keep fighting. You know, when you want to be a champion, you keep eating or keep training until you get that medal. And same with cancer, you just keep fighting until you get done with the battle.
So what about your weight gain / loss when you're in hospital? Because most people lose weight when they're in hospital.
Most people.
How did you go when you're in hospital with your weight?
The first few weeks when I was in hospital, I actually did lose a few kilos. I got down to 80, which isn't that light. But then I was allowed to go home for 1 week. And in that 1 week back home, I just gained it all back again.
It's funny. So when I was on placement for dietetics, like I had a few patients with cancer I had to look after. And yeah, one of the hardest things, particularly when you start giving people chemo and sometimes radiotherapy, depending on where, is getting them to eat because your appetite just goes. And sometimes cancer can be hypermetabolic, like you can have elevated requirements. But yeah, actually getting somebody with the appetite to feed is really difficult. And so for people to gain weight, it's very, very rare unless they're retaining water. Like preventing weight loss is a good job.
Yeah. Well, I feel like for me, obviously I did lose my appetite and everything just tasted like metal. It tasted disgusting. But a big factor was also that I wasn't moving anymore. So in the past, I was training quite often and just moving around all the time. And all of a sudden, I was just lying in bed all day. And there wasn't much to do apart from just Netflix and eat food.
So you went home after, you said you were in hospital for a week, then went home for a week?
I was in hospital for 3 weeks and then home for 1 week and then in hospital for another 3 weeks and then home for another week and then in and out of hospital after that.
And were you undertaking chemotherapy that whole time? Was that?
Yeah, so I only needed 2 rounds of chemo, which is good. And then I was in remission.
So how did the chemotherapy affect you, your mood and everything? How did it make you feel?
Well, actually, the first week when you get chemo, you actually don't feel that bad because the chemicals is just starting to enter your bloodstream. But the following week, once all the chemicals are in your body, you just feel like absolute shit. The chemo wipes out all the cancer, which is good, but it also wipes out everything else in your body. So you have no more red blood cells. So you don't have any more energy, no more white blood cells, so you don't have any more immunity, which is why they lock you up into the hospital so you don't catch any diseases. And it also wipes out your plasma as well. So I had a lot of bleeds in the hospital too. And side effects.
So they're the main effects. Yeah. What?
Side effects. Your eyes get really sensitive, so I had to wear sunglasses indoors. Or you get really bad diarrhea as well. I think I was having diarrhea like 20 times a day. And because I was having so much diarrhea, it gave me hemorrhoids. So it was really painful when I had diarrhea.
Bloody hell. Yeah. Literal pain in the ass. That actually wasn't going to be an intended pun. I thought, what a pain in the ass. And then I was like, oh, that's apt. But yeah, legit pain
literally.
In the ass. Yeah.
What else was there? Well, just obviously no energy. Really bad stomach cramps. Oh yeah. I also lost my hair as well. I think that's a quite common side effect.
Mm.
But I actually like having no hair. It just makes life so much easier. Initially, when I was first starting to fall out, it was such a pain because the hair was just falling everywhere. And then when I went home for a week after my first treatment, I just shaved the rest off. It was great fun.
You seem to, in the way you describe it to us now, you're very blasé about things like having your hair fall out and shitting yourself 20 times a day and having hemorrhoids and having no appetite and getting out of breath and not being able to go home and losing all this weight. At the time, surely that was knocking you about a little bit. Was there, like, how did you try to cope with those changes that were happening to you?
Just don't think about it too much.
Well, no, it sounds like it would be hard not to think about it because it's not like you're distracted, like you're in hospital.
Yeah, so you do try and distract yourself. Lucky for me, I had such a great support network, so I always had someone with me in the hospital. And when I was first diagnosed, Bethany, she drove all the way down from Sydney to Melbourne to come see me, Bethany and her mum. So I had her there with me. And just people coming to visit, everyone from the club to chat and keep up with the gossip, who just try and keep sidetracked.
To sort of pursue the same point, at that point when you were diagnosed, I presume you conceived of yourself as an athlete and as an athletic active person. And at least in the short term, having cancer, that was taken away from you. And you went from being an athlete to a wreck. What was that like?
That was probably the mentally toughest part, just not being able to train anymore. So obviously locked up in hospital, not allowed to leave. But I did start doing yoga.
In hospital?
In hospital. I was following YouTube videos and I had my yoga mat. The girls from Canberra, the Strength Syndicate, they sent me a yoga mat and some Lululemon, which was really nice of them.
That is cool. Because when you get hospitalized anorexics, one of the things you have to watch for, they'll self-sabotage their feeding and things, but they'll also try and do exercise covertly. And so sometimes the nurses will be on watch to see if you have the anorexics, trying to do push-ups or burpees or whatever when no one's looking.
Okay.
Or go pacing the walkways to try and burn more energy. So it's funny to actually have someone who's just doing yoga for self-care. But that's cool. Okay, something else you said to me once, I found it hilarious, and it also says a lot about you. You asked me how training was going at the time, and my back was a bit sore. And so I said, my back's a bit sore. And you said something along the lines of,
I
recovered from...
What did I say?
No, it was funny. You said, I recovered from cancer faster than my fucking patella tendonitis. So injuries are something that occurs to a lot of athletes, and particularly powerlifters, but potentially life-threatening illnesses aren't. So was there any similarity in how you dealt with something like patella tendonitis and cancer?
Just have to be patient, no matter what it is. I mean, my patella tendonitis is still here. It's about 90% better, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
The cancer would have hindered the recovery time just because I didn't have any red blood cells. So, therefore, nothing really recovers in your body.
Yeah.
Sure,
you could get a TUE, though, for a platelet-rich plasma injection into your patella. If you're busy getting cancer treatment, you said just slip us in one of them, maybe some growth hormone or something. Slap some peptides in and then...
Golly, you should be a sports doctor.
Hopefully Robert's not listening.
Yeah. All these athletes faking cancer so they can go get on the juice in hospital.
Actually, as soon as I got out of hospital, Asada showed up to my house.
Yeah, and you were probably pissing uranium at that stage. They would have been is this chick Spider-Man or something?
Luckily, I don't know. Either way, I wasn't home. I was in Queensland on a holiday,
and
just enjoying myself.
If you got a whereabouts violation for being in hospital,
well, I'm not on the whereabouts. I'm just on the list of people who should be tested.
list of strong people.
List, yeah.
And Alex and I fly under the radar, which is, yeah, why I can blast so much shit all the time.
My dad was home and he called me. He was like, these people are here trying to test you for drugs. I was like, oh, okay. Lucky I'm not home.
Lucky it's not DEFCON weekend.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of drugs, yeah. So why are you in Sydney at the moment?
Why am I in Sydney? To be on Weekly Weights.
It's a business trip. Just in case the ATO or listening, I'm going to review you.
And I'll claim back my DEFCON ticket on work-related expenses as well.
So yes. You're here for DEFCON.
DEFCON is tomorrow.
DEFCON's tomorrow. Very exciting. I love all that music that goes doof, doof, wow, wow, and sirens and stuff. That's cool. Okay, your cancer is in remission, and that's kind of one of the reasons I asked why you're here for DEFCON. So your cancer is now in remission. What was it like to be told the news that you were, you know, all better, and what did that actually entail for you afterwards? What did you have to do to keep recovering?
Well, I got the news when I was still in hospital. So there was still a lengthy recovery process ahead, but that meant no more chemo, which was great. So it couldn't knock me down any further, and it just meant coming up from there. But still need lots of patience, because at the moment I'm still, my strength's still not 100%.
So when they say cancer is in remission, what does that mean for the probability of it actually recurring, of it like re-emerging?
Well, for my case, because it's different from case to case, the doctor said probably 90% it won't come back. Whilst you're in remission for the first couple of years, and then after 5 years, they generally say that you're cured, which means that it probably won't ever come back.
And do you find the sort of 5-year waiting period daunting?
Yes and no. Sometimes when I'm not feeling well, I do think, oh shit, I hope it's not cancer. But overall, I keep a pretty positive mindset.
So you're like a reverse hypochondriac, because, you know, there are people who have absolutely no reason to suspect there's anything wrong with them, who, you know, they'll stub their toe and their toe hurts a week later and they're like, fuck, I must have bone cancer of the toe. And then here you are, having actually had bone cancer, blood cancer.
Blood cancer, yeah. Well, blood's made in the bones. So.
Yeah. And you're being like, oh, it's probably fine. Alex, do you have anything particularly to ask, or should we have a quick break?
No, I think we've covered recovery quite well.
All right, let's have a break. We'll come right back.
Wiggly Weights.
Weekly Weights. Welcome back to Weekly Weights. I'm Alex, here with Will, and we're here with Yanni.
G'day, it's going on.
Great start.
Yanni, why don't you intro us, actually? No. Yeah, shush, Alex. Yanni, bring us back in. Tell us where we are, what we're doing.
Oh, welcome back to Weekly Weights, ladies and gentlemen. Today we have Alex and Will here to speak to us about being mediocre lifters.
Alright, back to Yanni. I recently saw you compete in your first comp back at Junior Nationals in August. Tell us how it felt to get back onto the platform after everything that you've been through.
It was so much fun, and I had to do it because it's my last year as a junior, and that was the Junior Nationals. So I didn't even take all the attempts. I skipped my last two deadlifts.
Why did you do that?
Oh, because I was competing again 2 weeks later, and I had to train the day after the competition.
So was it daunting for you, like the first time you were able to go back to the gym and start training for powerlifting? What was that like? Like, how did it feel? And was it scary for you to get back under the bar?
Well, it wasn't scary. It was more exciting. But when I first went back to the gym, I didn't go straight back onto a bulk cycle or any powerlifting training. It was just mostly just working on getting my fitness back after being bedridden for 3 months. You're pretty unfit.
Did they give you exercise advice? For when you got back from your chemo, did they say go and do some aerobic work or what?
None that I can recall, actually.
What's the Wilkes aerobic protocol? 3x5 hit sprints or something?
3x5 walk on the treadmill.
No, just walk to the ice cream shop.
How long was it then before you could actually get back to a Wilkes cycle of powerlifting?
I think I started my Wilkes cycle for junior nats maybe 2 months before the competition.
And how long were you training, or like as in exercising before that?
Oh, I went straight back into the gym in January. So I was out of hospital just for Christmas.
Yeah.
And I was still getting some blood transfusions and some treatments in the hospital in January, but at least I was out of hospital, so I was able to go to the gym.
And so you said you were doing mostly aerobic work, like walking to the ice cream shop. When you started lifting weights, did you get back under the bar to squat, or did you just go do some leg press? And...
Well, actually, I couldn't squat either because I still had my bloody patella tendonitis. I could deadlift, could bench, but could not squat. I started seeing this chiro, Charmaine.
Yeah.
And I was pretty skeptical about chiros. I was like, oh, they're all bloody scam artists. And she actually knew what she was talking about. And she gave me all these weird exercises, like deadlifting with a bar behind you. But it actually fixed my knee, surprisingly. It made the pain less bad.
I think that's what the original hack squat was. That's like the George Hackenschmidt named after squat exercise. Is that correct? You hold the bar behind you. And you do like a kind of weird, almost like sissy squat motion.
Yeah, with your knees, with your heels elevated.
Yeah, with your heels elevated.
Yeah, so it actually does smash your quads.
Yeah, it's the Mickey Eldred special.
Yeah, so Mickey Eldred's an old colleague of Alex and mine from Fitness First. He had some really good niche exercises, very polyquin.
So Yanni, you mentioned that you competed in China. So that was about 11 months after Nationals last year.
Yeah, 10 or 11.
So how much of a hit did your numbers take from the year before?
I totaled 516 at Nationals October 2017. And then a year later in China, what did I total? 440.
So you got a bit of a smack from it. What I'm curious about is that you chose... You didn't just choose to do Junior Nationals, which makes sense because it's your last year as a junior, it's important.
Yep.
But you also wanted to go do this competition in China.
Yeah.
Why was it that you were so drawn to go straight back to competing and not just go to the gym and train?
Well, actually, I just doing the comps just for fun. And it's the first competition we've ever had in China, and I'm Chinese, and I have family in China as well, so they were able to come watch me compete. So it was more just for fun.
Was it daunting at all for you knowing that you wouldn't be as good as you were initially, or you didn't care?
No, I didn't care. I've accepted that fact that I'm not as strong. Maybe in a few years' time. Yeah.
Have you found that the experience you had with cancer has changed how you approach training, and both like from a practical standpoint and mentally?
Yeah, well, in the past, it was all just about being as strong as possible, you know, trying to be the champion. And now I actually focus a bit more about being healthy as well, and not just lifting. Sometimes I do a bit of sort of cardio. And I started doing a bit more yoga as well. And doing more stretching. I never used to stretch. Now I started stretching too. They're just doing all-around training instead of just lifting weights all the time.
What's been... It's probably hard because it's not an apples-and-apples comparison, but what have been the hardest things that you've gone through when you consider both your cancer and your powerlifting career and, you know, coming back from cancer? What have been the biggest challenges and what have you learned from them?
The biggest challenges? That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Well, how about let me ask another way. What have been your lowest lows and your highest highs? Like when's the moment when you felt most down in the dumps about, you know, say having cancer or training or whatever it was?
Probably just being locked up in hospital. That was pretty tough.
because you're not allowed to leave. You're connected to your IV drip. So if you want to go anywhere, you have to wheel that thing around with you. And when you're having diarrhea 20 times a day, it was pretty hard to jump out of bed and wheel that thing over to the bathroom with you as well. And obviously couldn't train then either. Just not being able to train is pretty tough mentally.
And then in terms of high highs, when were you most excited? Was it leaving hospital and being able to train for the first time? Was it being on the platform again? Or was it still, you know, your triumphs at Worlds? When have you felt proudest and happiest?
Not gonna lie, standing on the podium getting a gold medal feels pretty good.
So better than beating cancer is beating other people at lifting weights?
Oh, no, now that you put it that way, beating cancer was probably a better feeling.
There's more cells in your body than people that have ever walked the earth. So when you think about it that way, you're beating like rogue mutant supercells. That's pretty good.
Cheers, mate.
Yeah, it's beating the elite of your own biology. Okay, you're a very positive person. And I don't think there are many people who'd go through the things that you've gone through and would be so sort of relaxed about the ordeal. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, obviously I had a lot of friends and family supporting me. And also I was in contact with Anthony Harris. I don't know if you guys know him.
No, Tony Harris. Where's he from?
He's from America.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Tony Harris.
He's a master's lifter.
Yeah, master's lifter. And he was talking to me about his journey as well. So in 2015, I think 14 or 15, I think 15, he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And he had to get surgery to get that removed. And he had to recover from that, obviously. And then the following year, at Worlds 2016... he squatted the open world record.
Oh, wow.
I know. That's amazing, oh, right?
I
do remember that.
The under 120s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, cancer's a very diverse group of diseases. Like when we say somebody has cancer, you know, you could be talking about two cancers, which are two incredibly different things.
Yeah.
But what experiences did he have that he shared with you that you thought were helpful?
Well, it was just really inspiring for me that he did not stop. He went straight back into training. One of the gruesome stories he told me was a few weeks after his surgery, his doctor told him to don't go back to training yet, but he thought that he'll be all right. So
his knob basically exploded.
Pretty much. He did a squat and then his underwear was all red after that.
So I've got a funny story about prostate cancer. Like, as funny as prostate cancer can be. We have a good family friend who had to have his prostate removed because he had a growth, and so he's had his prostate removed, and we went on sort of like a family holiday, and he dagged along recently, and he was still in like a not great way because he'd had his prostate done recently, and we went to play golf, and he wasn't able to play golf with us because that was still too much exertion for him. But while he's a bachelor. And while we were away, he matched with somebody on Tinder.
Oh,
yeah, this cute young girl on Tinder who he was absolutely smitten with. And he was there for just a few days, and he went out on some date with a Tinder bird. And he was saying that, you know, he was head over heels for this girl, and she was hot as anything, but he couldn't make anything happen because he was still too tender to actually get it done with his prostate. So he said it's like, if you think about blue balls, imagine like not just
red balls.
Yeah, or potentially horrible red balls, this poor guy. But he soldiered through it and he went on the date anyway. You never know. He might go back to that same holiday location and sweep her off her feet next time.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, maybe she just thought that he was a really respectful guy and he didn't want to try anything too soon.
Yeah, or maybe so.
maybe he tried anyway.
he didn't get to that point in the story, so who knows. Sorry, I just thought of one of my worst cancer-related jokes. How tactless are jokes about cancer?
Oh, yeah.
How do you find it when people tell jokes about cancer?
I was actually on the phone with Jason Pan,
when I was in hospital. This is when I just got diagnosed. And he was just about to go on a holiday to China, so I didn't want to ruin his holiday and tell him anything. And he was just complaining about life, and he's like, oh, these things are so bad, it's bloody cancerous. And he said that to me, and I was like, ooh.
I love how... Again, I think that's just such a funny anecdote in that you were saying, I don't want to ruin this guy's holiday by telling him I have cancer, because that'd be like a real pain in the ass for him. You know, that, yeah, I think that says a lot about you. Shall I tell my cancer joke? It's pretty weird.
Yeah, oh, yeah, tell us your cancer joke.
All right, you guys can tell me if this is bad, because Alex is normally the one that says things that really alienate people on the podcast. I just think this one's funny, though. So a doctor walks into the room, and there's this old man. He's in hospital anyway, obviously. The doctor walks in and says to him, mate, I got two bits of bad news for you. He goes, you've got cancer and you've got Alzheimer's. And the guy goes, oh, well, at least I don't have cancer.
That was so bad, but it was still funny.
Yanni, what goals do you have for your future with powerlifting now, and how have these goals changed since you were diagnosed with cancer?
Well, actually, it's a bit interesting in that when I first got diagnosed with cancer, when I was in hospital, that's when PA first got kicked out of the IPF as well. So everyone was sort of lost about what direction they were going at that time. But for most people, they just continued on with their training. For me, that was interesting to look onto because I couldn't train, but I was keeping an eye out for what other people's plans were. And now, instead of just trying to be a world champion again, I'm just focusing more on health and fitness and slowly building up my numbers. Nothing too dramatic.
And how long do you think it will be until you're back to your peak?
If I continuously do powerlifting cycles, maybe another 2 years. Yeah. Which is like, I only took 3 months off training and now it's taking... like 2 years to get it all back, but understandable.
Yeah, you did have cancer.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably excusable given the circumstances. It's not like you were just slacking.
It's not like you went on a holiday.
Yeah. Really, really shitty holiday. Like, I've been to some bad hostels, but I imagine hospital accommodation is much worse. Should we take another quick break and we'll come back? Yeah, all right. Quick break. Four questions to tell us everything we need to know about Yanni.
Weekly Weights.
Oh, fuck yeah, the Weekly Weights. Yeah, the boys.
Okay, we're back to Weekly Weights episode 22.
Three.
Far out, I lose track. Night. Sorry, Yanni. You're right. It is episode 23. We're here with Yanni. We're going to ask her the four questions that tell us everything we need to know about a person. Alex, fire away with question one.
All right, so Yanni, if you could take one person out to dinner, dead or alive, who would it be?
The guy who invented KFC. What's his name?
The Colonel.
Colonel?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was asking what his secret spices are.
That's a good answer. It could be worth a lot to you, actually.
It's a solid answer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's lucrative.
What's your favourite thing on the menu at KFC?
The hot and spicy, but we don't have that in Victoria.
I don't know, what, the hot and spicy nuggets or something?
No, like the hot and spicy normal chicken. Like, we only have original recipe. We don't have the hot...
Don't you have the wicked wings?
We do have the wicked wings.
That's the best thing.
But a potentially contentious opinion, but I rated Red Rooster higher than KFC.
Nah, you're out of your mind. Red Rooster's terrible.
I
used to work at Red Rooster. And,
yeah, back in Fat Will days when I went on rugby tour, we used to stay at this place in Queensland, and there was a Cold Rock on one corner and a Red Rooster on the other. And we called Red Rooster Dirty Bird, but you call KFC Dirty Bird. Mm. Yeah. And so we would all buy like a family pack of Cold Rock every night and put it in the freezer. Oh, not every night, every afternoon.
You would buy a family pack.
Everyone did. Just me especially. But we weren't allowed to have that much cold rock because the coaches were like, it's unhealthy and you get fat. We'd all hide them. And then at night time, everybody would pump a family cold rock. And the coaches would be running around room to room to try and catch people eating cold rock. And they knew we were doing it. And you just like jam it between your legs or like under your pillow or something and then just go back and smash it. But I got a Red Rooster a couple of times and I thought it was a revelation. I actually really liked it. Whereas KFC, I've been like, it's okay, but a bit underwhelmed.
No, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, Yanni looked heaps skeptical. Okay, fair enough.
Question two.
Yeah, question two.
Who's your favorite athlete of all time? And this can be from any sport.
From any sport.
Well, I have to go back to Mr. Anthony Harris again. He's just been such an inspiration to me during my recovery, especially. He, you know, got surgery for prostate cancer. A year later, squatted a world record. That's amazing.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's very intense. All right, question number three. Which character from a movie or television show are you most like?
Oh, well, a few months ago, it would have been Mr. Aang from... Avatar. That's the show. Well, I had no hair at the time, and Bethany Parker made a nice little, what do you call it, picture drawing thing for me, where she drew an arrow on my head and put all the fire, water, wind, and the other symbol next to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
it's
it.
Avatar, the last airbender. It's just the only one that... Yeah. Fire. Oh, sorry, you said wind. Fire, water, earth, air.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, the Avatar can do all four. We used to, that was another thing we used to do on Rugby Tour, is we watched Avatar, like,
really?
Marathons of it. Yeah, because they had MasterChef and Avatar running constantly, and we would just smash them. And then one night we had everybody in my room to watch a movie called Arachnophobia, about like giant spiders that were like literally hunting people down, and there was like a nest of an evil spider. It was really funny. It was really badly made, but they basically just had big spiders and we were all like screaming like,
oh, that's cute.
It was good fun. But yeah, Avatar's a great show. All right, final question. Your life is being made into a montage. What song is it going to be set to?
FTS by Showtek, because I live for the weekend. I live for hard style. And that just goes on repeat.
So we normally make our guests sing us out, but I think you've already done it so well that we don't have to.
Alright, Yanni, quickly tell everyone where they can find you on social media.
Oh, Instagram, YanstaX. YanstaX.
Wait, it's a YanstaX.
Yeah.
I thought it was YanStaX the whole time.
Some people do call me YanStaX in real life.
That makes so much sense because it's like you're lifting stacks of weights, you know?
Oh. Yeah. Nah, my nickname in high school was Yanstar. Sure, like,
was that
play on words. No.
YanStar, like play on monster?
Gangster.
Oh, okay. Sorry, that's Liz Craven's thing.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't want to get on Liz's turf because you know what happens when you step on a gangster's turf is gang war.
No, we don't want that.
Liz will cut you.
she will stab you. Shout out Liz Craven, the stabbiest mum in powerlifting Australia. Probably the stabbiest mum in world powerlifting now. Mm. Yeah? Or maybe my mum's up there. Shout out mum. Artie Bergman. The lady who immortalized Go William. All right. So we can find you on Insta at YanstarX.
Yanstarx.
Is there anywhere else where we can get in touch with you or it's worth getting in touch with you?
You can find me on Facebook.
Yeah,
Yanni's Zell Powerlifting. Or memes. Oh, no, I don't post too many memes, actually.
Do you call them memes or memes?
Memes, just to piss people off.
As long as it's not like a meme, I'm fine with that. All right, well, I'm Will Berkman, so at w.bergmanpt.
I'm Alex Hayes, at alexhayes_lift.
And I'm Yanni Zell, at YanStaX.
Do you want to, yeah, tell us, you know, come back next week, all that stuff. Oh, actually, you can write a review for us. That's what you can do.
Oh, sweet as.
Yeah, if you were to give us a review, just on the spot now, what would you say?
These boys really have a face for radio.
Fair.
Ouch. I'm offended.
Jokes, jokes, jokes.
Okay, here we go. This one's really nice. So we've got a review by Scary to Her Friends here.
Scary to Her Friends. I listened to this first because Liz told me to. Then I started following both the guys on Instagram as well, and now I'm a regular stalker, tagger, listener. I find it really handy as a noob because the boys explain stuff that I didn't know. I really like the music in the breaks, and I find the breaks useful for timing my meals throughout each podcast because a girl's gotta eat.
Agreed, Yanni. Girls gotta eat.
That is certainly very true.
Do you want to read the next one as well? Might as well. Just burn through them. Guys, leave us more reviews so we can read more reviews.
The
you.
Intro... This is by LKG Dog. The intro music is great. The banter is great. I wish my son William would come home... for dinner on time. I frequently smoke weed and he never arrives on time to enjoy with me. But regardless, good podcast.
That was by, I'm 100% certain that was by Loco McDonald. It's not I regularly smoke weed, it's I frequently smoke meats, like smoked meats, and he never arrives on time. Anyway, yeah, good stuff. Thanks, Loco. All right, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Three,
Weekly Waves, tell your mates, it is great. I'm from interstate, know the place, can't